From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 1 week since the U.S. Supreme Court effectively ended affirmative action in college admissions, at least as the policy has been pursued for the past several decades. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the decision for a 6-justice majority. Roberts said institutions of higher education must now use criteria that are colorblind. Roberts wrote, in part, "Many universities have for too long concluded, wrongly, that the touchstone of an individual's identity is not challenges bested, skills built, or lessons learned, but the color of their skin. Our constitutional history does not tolerate that choice," Roberts wrote. But there are exceptions, like the U.S. military academies. And there were also voices of dissent from the opinion, like Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first black woman on the high court. She wrote, "With the let-them-eat-cake obliviousness, today the majority pulls the ripcord and announces colorblindness for all by legal fiat. But deeming race irrelevant in law does not make it so in life." Now that we've all had a week to reflect on this decision, we are taking a deeper dive into what it could mean for colleges and universities here in Illinois and across the country. Joining us for that are four guests, all of whom work or teach in higher education. Jeff Mavros is Executive Director of Admissions and Recruitment Marketing at Illinois State University. Jeff, welcome to The 21st Show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Also with us from ISU is Associate Professor Megan Leonard, who teaches judicial decision-making and constitutional law. Professor Leonard, welcome to The 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you.
We're also joined by two members of the faculty at Northwestern University. Anthony Chen is Associate Professor of Sociology and co-author of The Fifth Freedom, which is a book about affirmative action in employment. He's also working on a book about the history of affirmative action in college admissions. Professor Chen, welcome to you as well.
Hi there. Thanks so much.
Also with us, finally, last but certainly not least, Alvin Tillery is director of Northwestern's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy. He teaches American politics and political theory, including racial and ethnic politics. Professor Tillery, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation today, the number, as always, is 800-222-9455. We want to hear your questions and thoughts on the U.S. Supreme Court's ending of affirmative action in higher education and what comes next. 800-222-9455. So, Professor Chen, I want to begin with you. And for those who maybe haven't caught up on some of the details of this decision, what is the big legal idea underpinning what the Supreme Court majority did here?
Well, the way I look at it, just a week out from the decision, is that the Supreme Court has essentially said that the way that affirmative action is practiced by the vast majority of institutions that do practice it is no longer valid. And so the system of individualized holistic review, where race is sort of weighed in a flexible way, after looking at all the different characteristics of applicants, including their race, that system no longer passes constitutional muster by this Supreme Court.
And Professor Tillery, what I wonder, when you look at this decision, what effects are you expecting to see at, say, Northwestern, in your classrooms, maybe, as a result of this decision?
Well, I mean, what we know from, the social science data, and there's, considerably good data, probably the most noteworthy is Derek Bach and Bill Bowen's book called The Shape of the River, but there have been several papers published since then that suggest that the 150 or 200 colleges out of the 3,150 colleges in America that practice affirmative action, where there's a sizable test score gap in SAT and ACT scores, we can expect them to lose about 40% of their students of color under a so-called colorblind rule. But the vast majority of college students in America don't go to those 200 schools. And so, about 95% of Black and Latino students go to schools where there is no affirmative action practiced in admissions because admissions are not competitive enough. So there will be an effect. It will mostly be at the elite schools. And we can expect somewhere between 40 to 50% of those minority populations to go away.
Interesting. Wow. Jeff Mavros, well, let me ask you where Illinois State University fits into that. How do you and your colleagues currently take race or ethnic background into account in admissions, if you do?
Sure. I'm in the fortunate position to be able to say that this is not going to affect us greatly at Illinois State because we don't consider race as a factor in our admission process. Dr. Tillery was articulating, there's a relatively small percentage of the schools across the country that are in the position to be as selective as they are and need really to rely on some of those practices that were just addressed a week ago. I'm at an institution where we admit the majority of the applicants who are considering our institution. And so the fact is our practice is not going to change in the way of our admission process specifically. And so there are a lot of things that we'll continue to do as we have, but we'll be less effective than some of these institutions, especially the elites across the country in the way of this ruling.
And Professor Leonard, I want to bring you into our conversation now because you teach judicial decision making and constitutional law at ISU. Can you maybe put this decision in the context of the past Supreme Court decision making on affirmative action and college admissions and just the general trend of where we've seen this court going in recent years?
Sure. The Supreme Court has addressed affirmative action for years. And one of their first decisions, a case out of the University of California, the Supreme Court said affirmative action plans are okay, but you can't have quotas. And so building from that in 1978, then in 2003, the Supreme Court said affirmative action plans are okay because the outcome of a diverse student body is what we call a compelling government interest. Under the Equal Protection Clause, which the Supreme Court uses to determine the constitutionality of affirmative action, any policy has to be, quote, narrowly tailored to meet, quote, a compelling government interest. Diversity in education was a compelling government interest as of 2003. So what the Supreme Court did last week was say that diversity is not a compelling government interest, and that the Equal Protection Clause has to be interpreted to mean colorblind, right? That any law that takes into consideration of race that is not colorblind is a violation of the Equal Protection Clause under this narrowly tailored, right, to meet a compelling government interest standard. So really the Supreme Court has overturned decades of precedent through this decision.
So let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are digging into the U.S. Supreme Court's decision last week ending affirmative action, as it's been practiced, at least, in higher education, and what that could mean for universities here in Illinois. We're talking about this with Megan Leonard, Associate Professor at Illinois State University, also Northwestern faculty members, Anthony Chen, Associate Professor of Sociology, and Alvin Tillery, who's Director of the Northwestern Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy, and finally Jeff Mavros, who's Executive Director of Admissions and Recruitment Marketing at Illinois State University, 800-222-9455, if you want to join our conversation. We have a caller on the line. I want to ask you to hold on. We're going to come to the point on military academies in a few minutes. Let's stick with this, the effects as we're going to be following this opinion. Professor Chen, can we have an admissions process that still takes race into account in some other way now?
You know, that's a good question. In the majority opinion, there's a passage that explicitly notes that information about an applicant's racial background can be included in the application essay. But it also says that the admissions office that decides to take this information into account can't use it to replicate the system that the Supreme Court just did away with. And in addition to that, in the majority opinion in this passage, it says that any information about race that's presented in an application essay needs to be weighed as a feature of the individual's background. So it has to point towards something about the individual. So if someone says, I'm an Asian American and I experienced racial discrimination, it sounds like what the court is saying is that information can be taken into account as long as the information about racial discrimination, the experience of racial discrimination that this applicant says they has, sort of points to some kind of quality or experience of their background as an individual. So I think there's some questions as to, you know, where that leaves admissions offices in terms of exactly how they're able to consider race. For instance, one question it might leave is, well, say like an individual says, I did experience racial discrimination and it helped build my character. How much can that information be weighed by an admissions office? Can it be weighed a lot? Can it be weighed a little bit? And exactly how must it be weighed beyond the fact that it needs to be weighed as a feature of the individual's experience? I think those questions are still outstanding. And we'll see both the Department of Justice and the Department of Education Civil Rights Units ponder these questions in the next 45 days or so as they begin to formulate guidance for schools that are wondering exactly what they can and cannot do in the wake of this Supreme Court decision.
You know what I think I hear you saying, let me try this idea on you. It sounds like the court is saying, yes, you can consider, say, if somebody mentions racism, but not the idea of systemic racism, which of course many of us have been awakened to in the past few years as we've gone through a number of reckonings in American life. Am I thinking of that as the court wants me to or wants us to?
Yeah, you know, I think the distinction that the court is trying to draw is to say, look, the admissions offices cannot take information about an applicant's race that's presented in an applicant's essay and say, okay, here we have a Black person and therefore we're going to weigh this aspect of their background a lot. That's what the Supreme Court says, I think, can't happen. What it says that it can happen is that this, if the application essay discusses how this person as an individual responded to the experience of racial discrimination, or how this applicant, finds a lot of meaning in their racial background as an individual, that information about the individual's experience with their racial background, that information can be considered on my reading of the majority opinion.
Professor Tillery, in a concurring opinion, so not the majority, but sort of an adjunct to the majority, Justice Clarence Thomas once again reiterated his longstanding view that affirmative action stigmatizes people of color. Do you ever hear evidence of that from students?
Well, not from students. I mean, I do think there is good social science evidence that there is racial tension on all of these elite campuses. That's certainly the case. I find it interesting that Clarence Thomas, who benefited from affirmative action at both Holy Cross and at Yale, doesn't seem to have suffered from the stigma that's attached to him. He seems to have made a lot of good friends who promoted him and travels a lot with billionaires. And so if that's the cost of the stigma, I find it really surprising that he's always kind of draping himself in this, this issue, because minority students on campus don't complain about that to the extent that they wanted to change race conscious admissions. And so no, I don't hear a lot of that, frankly.
Interesting. Professor Leonard, one of the other distinctions people might be trying to figure out in this decision are public and private universities. They were both at play in the decision. Do you see anything coming into play in that as people are trying to implement new systems at universities across the country? Any distinction between public and private universities? And maybe even, I don't know if this is getting too far afield, but red states and blue states trying to implement these things differently.
So the majority opinion doesn't really touch on that, except as we've said, to say that military academies are different. And in fact, Justice Sotomayor is the only one who really addresses the different types of universities in her dissenting opinion, saying that the majority opinion just says, right, all universities are the same, when we know they're not. And there's not a lot of distinction in the majority opinion between Harvard and UNC. You get into that distinction in the dissenting opinions. One thing I do want to go back to, though, is you mentioned this idea of systemic versus individual level racism.
Sure.
And that is really the big difference between particularly Justice Thomas and Justice Jackson's opinions. Justice Thomas thinks that every part of this is about the individual student. And Justice Jackson is saying it can't be about the individual student because systemic racism is so deep in our society, whether we're talking about health outcomes or the wealth gap or anything like that, that you cannot separate those things. So I think you're very much on track to say this can be about individual experiences, because the majority and the concurring opinion really dismiss the significant impacts of systemic racism.
Okay, we need to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation. And I'm going to ask our callers to hang on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we get back. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. We are talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision last week, effectively ending affirmative action as it's been practiced in higher education. And we're talking about how universities will proceed to pursue their goals of a diverse student body. This is The 21st Show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about last week's decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, effectively ending affirmative action in higher education, at least as it's been practiced in the past. We're talking about all this with four people who work or teach in higher education. Anthony Chen and Alvin Tillery are on the faculty at Northwestern University, respectively. Professor of Sociology, Anthony Chen, also co-author of The Fifth Freedom, a book about affirmative action in employment, and he's working on a new book about the history of affirmative action in college admissions. Tillery is director of Northwestern's Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy. We're also joined by Illinois State University Associate Professor Megan Leonard, who teaches judicial decision-making and constitutional law, and Jeff Mavros, who's Executive Director of Admissions and Recruitment Marketing at Illinois State University. Professor Tillery, I understand the U.S. Supreme Court ruling might have ripple effects outside of higher education, right? There's a provision of the Civil Rights Act that prohibits discrimination in any activity that gets federal money. What do you see as some of the possible downstream consequences from this decision beyond college admissions?
Well, I mean, right now, from the standpoint of you know, this ruling, and Charlotte Burroughs, who's the director of the EEOC, you know, has said that we shouldn't rush to conclude that this is going to have a major, you know, downstream consequence for business, right? I mean, so the affirmative action case was a Title VI case, which really governs sort of grant money from the federal government. Most corporations in America are not, you know, sort of under the position to be governed by Title VI law. They're governed by Title VII, which prevents discrimination in hiring. And so, you know, corporate America's hiring practices already do not resemble the explicit discussion and use of race that we see at these 200 schools using affirmative action in admissions. And so I would say that while corporate America should be prepared for the kinds of movement conservative right-wing challenges led by people like Stephen Miller, you know, they should expect to get threat letters. That's already happening. It's not clear to me at all that this law is going to take down Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. This ruling is going to take down Title VII of the Civil Rights Act and create huge problems in corporate America. That's not clear at all.
Hmm. Jeff Mavros, ISU says diversity and inclusion are core values, right? I'm reading from the website here, quote, "We aim to foster an inclusive environment characterized by cultural understanding, respect, and social justice. Do you see, I mean, I know you said this particular court decision is not necessarily going to change admissions at ISU, but I mean, is that goal going to become harder either at Illinois State or in general in higher education, in your view, in the weeks and months and years ahead?
Sure. Well, I don't think it makes it easier. And I think it's very likely to make it more difficult kind of on a nationwide basis. I think schools will probably remain steadfastly committed to providing educational opportunities to students from all walks of life. And then for those that do enroll, to provide all the supports and opportunities that they can to see those students be successful, you know, ultimately persist and graduate with a degree from their institution. And different students may need different supports and resources from those institutions. And I don't think that commitment is going to waver at all. But I do think the potential danger here is even in the discouragement of potential applicants to certainly selective institutions, but also maybe just to higher ed in general. And so I think when you're talking about having a larger applicant pool and potentially in sheer numbers, more students who are traditionally underrepresented in higher education available to you as an Office of Admissions to help realize those goals, as that N starts to shrink, it just provides less opportunity for schools to make those opportunities available to students, and certainly less opportunity for those students. So I think that's part of the real risk here is there interpretive overreach where people are going to read more into this ruling than what's there? Is this going to discourage students from pursuing some of the opportunities that are available to them now? And so I think there's a lot here to unpack.
I want to mention, I know, Professor Tillery, I know you need to leave us by 11:30, so I'm going to just shoot one more question your way before we lose you. But I do want to ask about public opinion with regard to affirmative action. And I will acknowledge that you get different results depending on how questions are phrased, right, using the term preference versus the phrase affirmative action. But Pew, which is aggressively nonpartisan, says more Americans disapprove of using race as a factor in college admissions than approve, 50-33. I wonder what you make of that.
Yes, I mean, that's been a consistent finding. It's consistent with my own findings coming out of the CSDD. The reality is that, it's not a very popular program, right? But a lot of things that we've done historically to advance racial justice, gender justice, equity for LGBTQ Americans has not been popular in terms of public opinion. The vast majority of Americans, probably about 65%, don't go to college at all, right? And so they don't have any clue about how admissions at an elite institution like Harvard works. The entire process is wrapped in mystery. And they think that, oh, well, people have got a test score, they've got good grades. Everyone applying to those schools, everyone, including the minority applicants, have astronomically high test scores and good grades. And right, so when you ask people, should race be a factor, their first thought is, of course not, just the grades and the test scores. And so those findings are accurate from Pew. They're consistent with what we've known for, you know, 30 or 40 years. But as Professor Leonard stressed in her opening comments, you know, the court has known about public opinion as well, and they've consistently found that there was a compelling state interest in providing a diverse educational experience at colleges. And so we shouldn't just let a public opinion finding allow us to dictate what we think are the right outcomes at the level of the court. That's not how it's ever been with the court. So. Mm.
All right, Professor Tillery, I know we need to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you all for having me. Take care.
Professor Chen, Professor Tillery there was mentioning about other factors beyond test scores, right? Which is, I think, maybe how a lot of people think of it. Oh, yeah, just test scores, you know, what are the sort of the main thing, grades that people consider. Another area that has gotten a lot of attention around this opinion are legacy admissions, right? This is where people whose parents or other family attended a school get a leg up in admissions. It seems that elite schools like this option. Presumably it helps with fundraising from alumni, but it's often criticized, especially on the left. Do you foresee an opportunity for changes around legacy admissions as elite universities work their way through what this opinion means for them, Professor Chen?
Well, I do think that it'll become a livelier issue than it has been even now. I'm not sure how far those efforts will go, though. You know, legacy is not a protected class or one way or another. And while the issue did come up, you know, in the litigation around these two cases, and there was some suggestion that legacy should be done away with in order to achieve like a race neutral system for creating diversity. I think the implications of this pair of rulings or this ruling really has to do with how the court thinks about strict scrutiny and how it thinks about whether diversity can constitute a compelling state interest and the conditions under which in trying to pursue that diversity program is narrowly tailored to satisfy the requirements of the Equal Protection Clause. So I do think that, you know, that there'll be additional controversy around the legacy admissions feature. And there might even be more, there might even be litigation that gets underway, but I'm not sure what will come of it all.
Professor Leonard, I promised we would get to this. Our caller couldn't stick with us to ask the question himself, but Justice Roberts' majority opinion made an exception for affirmative action at the military academies. But, and this is not my original point, not my point, I should say, I heard this made elsewhere, but a huge share of the American military officer class comes out of civilian universities through ROTC programs. I wonder what you make of that dichotomy. Can public universities use, or I guess, you know, non-military academy universities use affirmative action in their ROTC programs going forward?
You know, I don't know. That will be, I think, something that admissions will have to figure out. And what was really interesting, right, is that Chief Justice Roberts was arguing that diversity in the military might meet a national security interest, right? And so he was, in many ways, almost arguing that the military should not be questioned or there should not be the same application of the law to these military academies in a way that really kind of came out of nowhere. Justice Sotomayor criticizes him in her dissent, arguing that there's not a lot of reason to this and why diversity might be compelling for national security, but is no longer a compelling interest under equal protection is really one of the small places where there's some disagreement, but also a place where there's a lot of open questions about what happens moving forward.
Yeah, interesting. Well, we need to wrap this conversation. Professor Chen, I think I'm going to come to you with a final question. Where do you see things going in the future with regard to, I guess, as we've been saying, elite university and the diversity of the student body, I guess that you'll be teaching at Northwestern, right?
Yeah. Well, I think there's things that to look out for in the short term, and then obviously things to look out for in the medium and the long term. In the short term, I think the first thing to look out for is information from the Biden administration's Department of Justice and Department of Education. Their civil rights units, I think, probably are working as we speak to try to parse the majority opinion as carefully as possible so that they can formulate a memoranda of understanding of some kind to guide schools that are still thinking about race in one way or another in their admissions process, maybe thinking about it in the way that the Supreme Court says they can look at it in the application essay. So, you know, in a month or so, there'll be some information, I think, from the Biden administration about exactly what they think the Supreme Court is saying about what can and cannot be done. That's what we should look out for in the short term. In the medium to long term, I do think that Professor Tillery, my colleague, is right, that there will be a drop in the level of representation of Black and Latino students at selective colleges. And I think a good number of schools that see those drops will try to explore race-neutral alternatives to affirmative action to try to bring their levels of diversity up as much as they can. I think the real question is how successful will they be? And I think that will depend on exactly what school you're talking about, what their competitive situation is, how much money they have to be able to put behind these race neutral programs, what their applicant pool looks like. So there'll be a lot of variability in how different schools wind up being able to deal with the end of affirmative action as we know it.
Anthony Chen is an associate professor of sociology at Northwestern, co-author of The Fifth Freedom about affirmative action in the employment setting, and working on a book about affirmative action in college admissions. We've also been speaking with Associate Professor Megan Leonard from the Department of Politics and Government at Illinois State University, Jeff Mavros, who's Executive Director of Admissions and Recruitment Marketing at ISU, and Alvin Tillery, joined us earlier from Northwestern. Thank you all so much for being with us today on The 21st Show.